Today's Shi'as Masechta Baba Basra Daf Tzadik Beis. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach, the new parak. Says the Mishnah Mech Peres L'Chaver, if somebody sells fruit to someone else, and this is the type of fruit with the seeds in the fruit that could be eaten or could be used for planting. V'zoran, and he planted these fruits, le'tzamchu, but they did not sprout, they did not grow, because they were inferior, but filu zarapishtan, even if what was sold is flaxseed, which flaxseed is typically sold for the purpose of planting, not for eating, and a chai b'chiyuson. The seller has no responsibility to the buyer, because the buyer could say, the seller could say, that I sold you these seeds for the purpose of eating. And because, as we're going to be learning the sugya of Ein Holchin B'mamon Acharoiv, even though most people who buy these seeds, flax seeds, for example, buy them for the purpose of eating, of planting, there's always a possibility that it was bought for not planting, and that Ein Holchin B'mamon Acharoiv, the fact that most people do it for that purpose, is irrelevant. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Zaroini Gina, if somebody sold seeds that are used only for planting in the garden, Shena Nechalim, that aren't eaten, they're Chayav Berchuyosom. But the question, of course, that Rishonim point out is, yes, Rav Shimon is saying that if it's something that's sold that is always planted, and therefore, if it didn't work out, it's not edible, they didn't sprout, the buyer, as we're going to learn, sells to the seller that this was a mekach tos, why should the seller be held responsible? Why should we not be concerned that the buyer did not do it correctly? He didn't plant it the proper way, in the proper place, in the proper time. So Taisa says that under normal circumstances, we assume that seeds that were planted are going to sprout. And if they didn't, we attribute it to the fact that they were inferior, that they weren't up to standard. However, Taisus then suggests that actually it would be the buyer's responsibility to prove to the seller that he did everything properly and that all the conditions that he needs to follow in order to have seeds sprout were there. Otherwise, the seller could indeed say that it's your fault, and even though they were obviously, if they were, they it's not my fault, it's not they didn't sprout. The Ramban and Rashba say that if what we need to do is, if there's any reason to believe that it's not the seller's fault, says the Rashbam, we automatically don't put it on to the seller. That means if the seller could say, well, there wasn't enough rain this season, the weather conditions weren't right, that itself would already be enough of a reason to stand up for the seller and not for the buyer, and that the buyer would not be able to have recourse, would have recourse back to the seller. Of course, the Rosh asked the question, the seller, even in a case where it's clearly the seller's fault, why shouldn't the seller be able to say to the buyer, okay, you feel that you have a claim that my seeds weren't good seed, give them back and I'll reimburse you. But here, obviously, he can't give back the seeds because they were already planted. So why should the seller take the loss? So the Rosh says that the seller can't make such a claim. And the Rosh explains the reason the seller can't make such a claim because it's the seller himself that created this loss for himself. Had he not sold seeds that were inferior quality, then the buyer says, this whole episode would have never happened. You sold me inferior seed. By you selling me inferior seed now, and I did what I was expected. I planted it, and then it didn't take root. I can't be held responsible. The Beis Yosef quotes the Ran that asked the same question, and he says that we would that's exactly what Rav Shimon is coming to teach us. Rav Shimon is coming to teach us that something that is intended to be planted. So when I bought it clearly with that intention. That if the seller, says the Beis Yosef, explicitly told the buyer, go plant these seeds. And then he did what he was told to do. And then when they turned out to be inferior, the seller will be held responsible. Says the Gemara, Itma Amaycha Shal Chaveroi, if somebody sells an animal, an axe to somebody else, the Nimtzanachen, and then this animal, before the sale, had already been an animal that had a history of doing damage. So as when we learned Masechta Bava Kamma, we know when we speak about an animal that does damage, there are two types of animals. There's an animal that's a tam, that did it less than three times, and there's an animal that's a mu'ud. So Ritva says that our Gemara is not referring necessarily to an animal that was nimtza nachon by being a mu'ud. Even if it was nimtza nafcha by being a tam, the same halacha that we're going to learn, that does the buyer have a claim against the seller, exists. So again, itma amaycha shal chaveroi, if somebody sells an animal to somebody else, v'nimtza nachen, and then it turns out that this animal had an experience that it was a nachen, and therefore such an animal was only used to slaughter, Rav amar reza mekhtos. So Rav says that this is considered a mekhtos, because if I would have known that this animal is a nachen, the only thing, as we just said, you could do with a nachen is shecht it. I wanted the animal to work with. So the loch is that you have that I could claim mekhtos. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel on the other hand says that the seller could say to him, Yochel Leimeloi. The seller could say to the buyer, "L'shchita mecharti loch. I sold you this animal for shchita, and therefore for shchita, it doesn't make a difference that it's a nachen." We know that throughout Shas, there's a big machloikus how to approach a situation of mamon amutl b'sofik when there's a question if I have a monetary claim or not. Opinion of the Rabbanon is hamotzi mechavera olav araya. The opinion of Sumchis is the Momen HaMotel B'Sofik Cholkid. So the question that the Rishonim discuss is when Shmuel and Al Gemara says that Yochalayim Alay Shchita, will even Sumchis agree that here will Sumchis say Momen HaMotel B'Sofik Cholkid, or will he agree to the Psak of Shmuel? So the Rishonim explained that here even Sumchis, the Rashbam says, would agree that we don't say Mutl Amam and Mutl B'Sochim. Only in a case where it's impossible to know what were the facts. There, Sumchis says, since we can never really determine the facts, there's Alocha Amam and Mutl B'Sochim Cholkin. Here, there's no question, there's no ambiguity about what the facts are. Since there's no ambiguity about what the facts are, Shmuel won't say Mamon HaMotel B'Sofik Cholkin. But Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says that Shmuel, who's paskening in our Gemara, Yochalayim Alay L'Shchita, is following the opinion of the Rabbanon, who hold HaMotz Mechavei Olav Araya. But according to Sumchis, that says throughout Shas, that Mamon HaMotel B'Sofik Cholkin, he will hold here as well, that we should say Hamam and Amutab Sofik Cholkin. The Shal Sechuvas Harosh brings the following question. If somebody sold eggs to someone else, and the eggs turned out to be eggs that had blood spots in them because they had already begun to fertilize. So the question is, and therefore they're not edible. The question is, can there be a claim of mekhtos? Can the seller say that I had no way of knowing that these eggs were a way of fertilizing, and it's obvious that you can't eat them? Or he could say, or the buyer could say, I wanted eggs that I could eat. These eggs are not edible. So the Rosh says that even though the seller could honestly say, I had no idea that these eggs had this issue, the halacha is that it's a mekach tos. The Tveres Yisrael says that the minig is that the seller, who's completely innocent, he had no way of knowing about the problem with the eggs, is potter. The Shulchan Aruch in Chayshe Mishpat, Simen Reish Lamed Bey Sif Yudes, Paskins. If somebody sells eggs to someone else, the nimtzu mezuras, they're already fertilized, they can't be used for eating. She'enu ruim lachila, have a mekach tos. Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that's considered a mekach tos, or maxas adamim, and he has to return the amount that was paid, says the Gemara. But then, interesting to follow the words of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch continues, v'achshav loy nagu kein, b'zman hazeh, that is not the minig, and therefore he says, minig mevatel da'alocha. And the minig is mevatel da'alocha, and therefore he says that b'zman hazeh, if such a situation were to come up, the seller will not be held responsible. Says the Gemara, continues the Gemara, so we have this dispute where the seller says, well, this I sold you this axe for the purpose of eating, and therefore the fact, the shechita, and the fact that it turns out to be a nachan is immaterial. And he says, no, I bought it for work week, and an animal that's a nachan cannot be used for an animal which cannot be used for shechita. You have to eliminate it. The Cheshukei Chemed, so as we explained, the Rishonim, the Ritva said, that even if it was only a nachan once, this machlokes that we're learning applies. What will be the halacha, asked the Cheshukei Chemed, where there was a girl who was mentioned to a boy, and the boy got engaged to this girl, even though he had heard that this girl has an issue that she had once stolen. But the way it was reported to him is that it only happened once, and that she was now careful, and now she didn't have this issue anymore. And then it turned out that she actually had stolen many times, three times. So now he says, obviously, it's much harder to overcome that kind of a habit. And if had he known that this woman had this issue, he would have not had gotten engaged to her. The question is, can he claim mekach tos? And of course, the question is very related. In our Gemara, where did he know it's a nachan? Did he not know a nachan? Can he claim mekach tos? And he says that, of course, that such a situation, the chosin could claim mekach tos. Particularly, he says, in a case where they're only engaged. He says, in a case where they are only engaged, the chosin obligated himself to marry her, given the conditions that were there. So the way I understand what he's saying is that it's not even the case of our Mishnah. Because the case of our Mishnah, the case of our Gemara, there was a full-fledged sale transaction. Now we want to undo that transaction, and the question is, can we not? But in a case where there was a commitment to do something, but that commitment was created based on certain facts, when the facts are incorrect, the commitment is not there. But ask the Gemara, v'lechsi, igav d'zav l'nechsa, if it's a person who normally buys animals for shechita, so it's obvious that he bought the animal for shechita, and now he can't claim, well, you sold me a nachin. But if he's a person, l'raja, if he's a person that normally buys animals to work with, so it's clear that he bought it l'raja. Answers the Gemara, Mishnah, the case that we're speaking about here is begavre de zav lachi lachi. He's a person that buys animals for both purposes. Since he buys animals for both purposes, that can't be a determining factor. So ask the Gemara, v'lechsi, but why don't we try to see the mei hechen nenu, the price of an animal that's going to be used for plowing is higher than the price of an animal that's going to be used for eating. So ask the Gemara, why don't we just look how much he paid? Answers the Gemara, lo tricha, the case here is the Yaka Bissera Kamed Mei Raja, that the price of animals that are shechita went up, and now they're the same price. So price is not a determining factor. So all the Rishonim ask a question. We learned the Gemara earlier in our Masechta on Daf Ayin Zayin on a base, where somebody sold a tzemed, the part of the animal, the yoke on the animal, and we don't know, is the animal included in that sale, or the animal not included in that sale. So the Mishnah said a machloikus, but the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah was damim maidim, that we should be able to determine was it included or was it not included by seeing the price. And there was a big machloikus. Rabbanan did not agree to this concept of damim maidim, and here, and Rabbi Yehuda did. Yet in our Gemara, asked the Rishonim, we don't have any machloikus. Everybody agrees that we rely on damim maidim. So why is that? So Rashbam answers that by tzemet and bakar, not everybody there's a question, what is included in the word tzemet or not. Here, it's not a question what's included. There's no shaila what was sold. There's no question what was sold. The animal was sold. The question is, what type of an animal? The way I saw of Chaim Brisker explains what the Rashbam means to say, that even the Rabbanon, who in that sugya did not subscribe to Damim Maidim, they didn't describe to Damim Maidim in a question where there's a question, what is the definition of the word? There's a question, what is the definition of the word semed? So there, Rabbi Yehuda said, Damim Maidim can help us define a word, and Rabbanon hold, Damim Maidim can't help us define a word. Here, the issue is not on the definition. It's an issue of what type of animal. An animal is an animal, therefore everybody will agree, follow the Damim Maidim. Tosfos says, by tzemed, most people don't call the animal included with a tzemed. Since most people, when they sell a tzemed, the animal is not included. So there, the question is that we have a chazaka that the roiv and the chazaka help the seller, and therefore the money can't be ngaraya. Most people buy in our time an animal. In other words, Taisa says we have to look at the roiv, and the roiv helps us decide, even though we're going to learn that not everybody agrees with that. The Rosh says that by an animal that's found a nachin, the decision is all in the hands of the lekeach, because I'm the buyer. In other words, the seller's intention is irrelevant. It's the buyer who bought it for a certain purpose, and now we have to define what that was or wasn't. However, there, it's both of them that are contributing, and there we don't say Dom and Maidim. The Rashbam says that, again, it has to be a case that not only is there a price discrepancy between the value of an animal that's used for shechita, an animal that's used for eating, but the discrepancy has to be more than a sixth. Because we go back to halach that we've learned and will continue learning very often, and that is the halach of Einah. Then in order to say mekach tos, it has to be more than a sixth of an overcharge. If it's going to be less than a sixth of an overcharge, it's never going to be considered a nor. And again, this entire question would not be relevant. However, there are Rishonim, the Rimigash, disagree. And the Rimigash's opinion is that it doesn't make a difference because not everything is just the price that was paid. The Rimigash suggests that if I want an animal for a certain purpose, even though what I paid was not necessarily more or less than the animal normally would cost, than the other type of animal would cost, but that's not the animal I wanted. I wanted an animal that I could use for plowing. And if I only got an animal that's usable for selling, for eating, then it doesn't make a difference what the price is. But I don't understand how the Rimigash takes our words of the Gemara, because the Gemara says if they're the same value, then he wasn't cheated. But it's not what I wanted. Ask the Gemara. So we're learning like the Rashbam. Ask the Gemara. So if there's no financial loss, l'may nafkamina. Says the Gemara, what's the nafkamina? Answers the Gemara, nafkamina latercha. I don't want to have to sell the animal or sell the meat when I wanted the animal without any tircha. And I presume that if there were no tircha involved, then the halacha would be that I wouldn't have a claim. So ask the Gemara, hey chidami, what exactly is the situation where Rav is saying that it's a mekach tos and I could demand, the buyer could demand his money back? If the seller doesn't have the financial means to pay me back, lack of turbazuze. So even though it may not be the animal I wanted, I should hold on to that animal because the Gemara tells us people, there's an important expression, memori rishoshe. When somebody owes you money, pari ephra. Even if he gives you bran, which is highly unvaluable, take what you got, because you're not necessarily going to get anything else. So if the seller doesn't have the ability to pay the buyer, even though the buyer is very unhappy with this animal, he still should hold on to it better than nothing. So the Gemara just taught us that if somebody owes you money, take what you could get. Tosfos and the Rabban quote the Rabbeinu Tam here we're learning that if somebody owes somebody else money, of course he could pay him with whatever he has. But Tosfos quotes the Rabbeinu Tam, the halacha is only when somebody owes somebody money. But when we talk about the employer can't tell the employee, yes, I owe you wages, but I don't have cash. I don't have cash to pay you. I'll pay you with something else. And Rashi explains that this is included in what the Torah Kedoshah says, Loisolon Pulasa Schacher. It's when an employer and employee agreed that one will work for the other. Included in that agreement is that if they said he's going to pay him in cash, he has to pay him in cash, and paying him any other way is considered a violation of Loisolon. As the Rashba says, even our Gemara that says that if somebody owes you money, take what you can get, that's only in a case where there was no explicit agreement that I'm going to pay you back in cash. But if there was an explicit agreement that I'm going to pay you back in cash, then halacha says the Rashba is that the Gemara's halacha that you could just take what you could get doesn't apply. I did see that there are Rishonim that want to differentiate, interestingly, there are Rishonim that want to differentiate between how I'm being paid. If I'm being paid with something that really is hard, that I don't really need, and that's hard to sell, so the worker could always say, everybody could always say, the worker could say, that's not what I want. But if he's paying him in something that is very valuable and something that's easy to sell if he needed to, then the employer can't pay him that way, says the Gemara. So again, why would the seller, asked the Gemara, want to give back the animal? Why would the buyer want to give back the animal to the seller in a case with something where he won't be able to get any other way to get his money back? Answers the Gemara, we're speaking about a situation where the seller does have the cash to pay him back. And now the Gemara explains the machlokes. Rav Amar, Hareza Mekachtos. Rav says Mekachtos, because Basaruba is leaning. We follow the Rav. Veruba Larajas Vini. In the time of Chazal, most people bought animals for the purpose of working. And therefore, when this animal is an animal that can't be worked with, the buyer could claim Mekachtos. The Shmuel Amalach, however, Shmuel's opinion is, Ki Azlin and Basaruba, where do we follow the concept of Roiv? Isser. When we speak about a case of Isser, the most classical example is that if a piece of meat is found in the street, in a community where 9 stores sell kosher meat and 1 store sells not kosher meat, and the halacha is called the parish, Meruba parish, a gemara that's quoted often in Shas, we assume that the animal, that the meat is kosher. But in a case where it's mominous, we don't follow Roiv. Of course, the other example that we follow, that the Rishonim discuss, is why don't we say that we follow Roiv by Bittel, where a piece of non-kosher meat fell into a pot of kosher meat, if there's shishim or whatever, Roiv, midaraisa, it's bottle. So Rishonim say that that is different, because when we have Bittel, what Bittel accomplishes is that technically everything in the pot becomes kosher. That's a very different type of Bittel than the case where we find a piece of meat in the street. Shmuel HaMelech again, Ki Azlin Basaruba, where do we follow Roy? Be Sura, Be Issa V'Heter. However, here we're speaking about Mominus. There we don't follow Roiv. Because, as the Rishonim, so the Rishonim give many explanations that we follow, why not? Tosfos explains, we say that when we ever have a Roiv, there's a meat in the other direction. And the person is holding on the money. Now, let's understand our case. Even if we'll say that Roiv people buy animals for plowing, there are a meat to buy animals for selling, which works in the favor of the seller. Plus the fact that the seller is holding on to the money. So since he's holding on to the money, so we have miut and chazaka combining. And when we have miut and a chazaka combining, so that's why the seller can prevail. The Trumas Hadeshin uses a concept that we've often discussed. Trumas Hadeshin says the reason why by Mammon we don't follow the Roiv is because that is contrary to the famous concept of Hamotzi Mechaver Al V'Raya, which we said earlier in our shiur today, even that we follow that concept, and therefore the halacha is that in such a case we don't follow the Roiv. The question that I saw that the Achronim ask is, our Gemara seems to take a strict, Shmuel seems to take a stricter approach when we speak about Dine Mominus versus Dine Issa V'Heter. That by Dine Mominus, the halacha is we don't rely on Roiv. And by Issa V'Heter, we do rely on Roiv. Yet in other areas of halacha, we find that Issa V'Heter is relied on, we do rely on, we don't rely, we need to have to aid them by Mammon, different halachas. So how come here Mammonus is considered stricter? So Tosfos answers, because the way to look at all of these instruments that are used throughout Shas, Roiv, Chazaka, they're instruments of Sofik. In other words, we have a question, which if we look through Shas, if we had to think about many of the situations that come up in Shas, many of the situations that come up in Shas are questions of a Sofik, and now we don't know what to do. So the question is, what instruments, what halachic instruments can we use to make this decision? And what Shmuel is teaching us in our Gemara is not because Issa v'Heter is stronger, that is more strict than Mammon, or is Mammon stricter than Issa v'Heter. But rather the way to learn it is that Roiv is not something that we could rely on. And in fact, and that's why Shmuel says I can't rely on Roiv. Interesting that the Sholem Meshiv asks a question on Taisus. He says, again, I accept, says the Sholem Meshiv, that Shmuel is saying, and that we gave the explanation as to why, that we don't rely on Roiv for Dine Mamnus. For Dine Mamnus, we need to have a Raya. Roiv will be insufficient. But then, asked the Sholem Meshiv, we know when we speak about Dine Mamnus, there's a concept that's often applied in Shas, and that's the concept of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. So the question is, why don't we use that concept over here? Do we follow Hefker Bezdin Hefker and give, and therefore the seller should have to return it? And the Sholem Meshiv doesn't answer that question. There's another very important concept that's discussed by the Paiskim in our Gemara. Our Gemara, according to Shmuel, has clearly differentiated between Isser v'Heter, where we follow Roiv, versus Mamnus, we don't follow Roiv. But sometimes a question could come up which is a combination of both. For example, where the Chushukei Chemed discusses a scenario where a doctor has to do a procedure with a patient. And if a doctor has to do a procedure with a patient, and he has to give him an injection, there are two types of injection, of needle that can be used to administer the injection. One is less painful, but it's more expensive. And the other is not as cheaper, but it's more painful. So the patient says, and most people, most doctors use the more expensive needle. So the doctor says, "En hochem mamanach roiv." We don't follow roiv. And even though roiv doctors maybe use that type of a needle, I'm not obligated to use that needle because we don't follow roiv. The patient says that this is a situation not of mammon. It's a situation of Isser, because you're going to be administering this procedure, and of course the halacha is that we should follow Roiv, that should be less painful. So here the Isser, it's a combination of a shaila of Isser v'Heter and Mamnus. It seems that most Paiskim are of the opinion where it's a combination of Isser v'Heter and Mamnus, then we follow the Roiv of this of a Heter, and that will apply to the Mamnus aspect of the question as well. The Beis Yitzchak was asked the following question. He says that for many years, the Sroigim that was sold in Vienna were a Sroigim that were imported from Corfu. One year, a merchant sold a Sroigim from Korska, and he didn't inform the buyers. One of the people who bought a Korskin Esrig returned it for a refund because he wasn't confident about the kashrus of the Korskin Esrigim. And he says, I had specifically assumed that, as always, you were selling me an Esrig from Korfa. The seller said that even though most people want Esrigim in those days from Korfa, since some people don't mind an Esrig from Corsica, we have the rule, and the halacha, as we're going to see, is like Shmuel teaches us, that ein hochen b'mamanach arrive, and therefore the burden of proof is on the buyer to show that he didn't want such an esrig. The Beis Yitzchak said that the seller is going to have to return the money, and we're not going to say here ein hochen b'mamanach arrive. He says that in a case where there was no reason for the buyer to assume that this esrig was a Korsakan esrig, everybody will agree that when there's no reason for the buyer to have any reason to assume that this is what he's getting, even Shmuel will say that the Mekach is a Mekach Tosh. Simon Isha ve'eved shor shvarim u'peiris. Meisvei, ask the Gemara, the Mishnah in Masech Tiksubis, Daf Tez Vav Amud Beis teaches us. Hisha shenes alman u'sgarsha, a woman who became a widow or her husband divorced her. He emes besulun desati. She says that when we got married, I was a besula, and therefore I'm entitled to a ksuba of 200 zuz. Vu I'm a loy ela ki almana nesaticha, where you got married, you were almana, and therefore you're only entitled to a ksuba of 100 zuz. And as the Gemara Masech Tiksubis explained, why don't we just take the ksuba and see what it says? So it's either because the ksuba was lost, or as we learned in Masech Tiksubis, there were places that where they didn't actually write the ksuba, so we have no document to fall back on. Vuay meloy ella, and the husband claims ella amana nesaticha. You were an amana when you got married, and you therefore your ksuba was never more than 100 zuz. So says the Mishnah. Im yesh edim shiyotzu behinuma. The minig was that a kala who was a psula would wear a veil. But if you wore that veil, v'roshe perua, and you still had your own hair, because you were never a married woman, so you had never needed to cover your hair, so that's a proof that you were a psula, and ksuba so mesayim. So explains the Gemara. Tama, what do we see that she, why is she entitled to the ksuba? Because she has edim, halaka edim, but if there were no edim, loy, she would not be entitled to ksuba. But ask the Gemara, Lema, Hoylech Ach Roiv Noshim, why don't we follow Roiv? If Rav says we follow Roiv, we should follow Roiv Noshim. Most women, Roiv Psulus Nasus, get married as a Psula. Answers the Gemara, Am Ravina, Mishum de Klamemer. Here, it's not just a question of Roiv. Ikelamemer, Roiv Noshim, Psulus Nasus. Yes, indeed, most women get married when they're Psulus. But there are women who are Almanas when they get married. And furthermore, says the Gemara, the call Hanisus Psula, when a single woman who was never married before gets married, Yeshla Kol, there's a lot more of a call that there such a wedding. The Zu Hoyva and Lakol, there was no call by this woman. So even Rav, who follows Roiv, only follows Roiv when the Roiv, as they said in Yeshiva, is a Gesunter Roiv, it's a healthy Roiv. This Roiv is a weak Roiv, and therefore we don't follow Roiv. Ask the Gemara if that's the case. So why would everybody agree if there were Edom? Then she's entitled to the Messiah. My ki ika, if they're Edom, why should she get the ksuba of Messiah? My hava middlessly call the fact that there's no call here. Shouldn't that be an indication that Sadi Shakrinanu, that these Edom are liars, and therefore we should not be able to rely on them? Ella, says the Gemara, we have to sort of amend what we said. Roiv and this is Psula Shesh Lekol. It's not that every woman who gets married to Psula has a call. Usually that's the case. For Zu Hoiva and Lekol, but this woman there was no call. So Isle Ruba, the Roiv has been weakened. And therefore, we can't rely on the Roiv, according to the Rav, even in a case where we normally rely on Roiv. And the way the Rishonim explain Rav's opinion is that, as we've said earlier, there's an important concept of a Moitzi Mechaveir Olav Araya. And we can't ignore, Rav is not ignoring the concept of a Moitzi Mechaveir Olav Araya. He just seems to learn that Roiv is stronger than the Roiv HaMotzi Michal Varaya. Again, because we have different competing halacha concepts. We have a concept of a Motzi Michal Varaya, and we have a concept of Roiv. So Rav says, faced with a dilemma, which halacha concept should I follow? Should I follow a Motzi Michal Varaya, or should I follow Roiv? So Shmuel says, I follow a Motzi Michal Varaya, and Rav says, I follow Roiv. But even though that's the case, that's only, says Rav, when we have a healthy Roiv. But in a case where the Roiv Isle Ruba, where the Roiv has been questioned by the fact that there's no call about the Hinuma, even Rav doesn't follow such a rife.